welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. He is Paul Dottino. The phone number is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll try to navigate Twitter along the way on the show as well. And, Paul, the Giants announced another new head coach interview, interviewing Carolina Panthers head coach Steve Wilks yesterday with John Mara, Kevin Abrams, Dave Gettleman, and Steve Tisch in attendance.
Yeah, you know, they're in that frame right now where they're talking to guys who are on postseason staffs. And so they've got this very small window where they had to get permission and then, of course, get the arrangements all squared away.
Well, luckily, the Panthers no longer in. That's why they were able to talk to Wilks this
yes,
week.
Yes, yes. Well, but that's also why they had to talk to him last week and couldn't get permission to talk to him last week because they were still playing.
Yes.
That's my point.
And they had to prioritize the guys that were still in to do the weekend interview, obviously.
So I guess what I'm getting, the point that I really wanted to make here in a very roundabout way is that there are some people who want to read into the order of the candidates.
I wouldn't.
You can't.
And it's funny.
You can't.
I'm happy you brought in the idea, Paul. Sorry for interrupting.
That's all right.
Of reading into. Because I think, and again, this is of no fault of the reporters because they're doing their best. But I think there's been four or five different favorites for the job over the last week. And I think the reason we're seeing that, or again, reported favorites. And I think the reason we're seeing that is, Paul, I don't think the Giants front office knows what they want to do yet.
Then probably not.
I still think they're figuring it out. I think they're having a very open-minded discussion. I think they're talking to all these people with a very open mind, giving each one a fair shake. And then when the interview process is done, whenever that happens to be, they'll have a discussion and they'll figure out where to go. Because let's be honest, at this point, there isn't a huge rush. Because a lot of the candidates are still playing, so you can't hire them now anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think they're going to find the right guy. And I don't think anybody knows yet.
You know, John, I think one of the things that I like about us being able to do this program is that we can come out and say that. See, a lot of the writers can't because their editors need a story.
Of course.
And they're like, who's the guy? Who's the guy going to be? And so they got to come up with something.
And the writers do their best. But if nobody's talking to them, what are they supposed to do?
And, you know, I've often said many times that a sports talk show host or a writer, whoever it may be, who's covering a team, there's nothing wrong with saying the team doesn't know, so I don't know.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that when
no.
It's the truth.
Correct.
Okay? Unfortunately, you have those hungry clickbaiter people who just insist on putting something out there, and it doesn't matter how much mud is being thrown against the wall, they have to put something out there.
Hey, look, I get it.
And that's a shame.
And look, fans want to know. I understand. Fans are anxious to know who the head coach is.
Yeah,
I get it.
But if there is no answer.
Correct. I think one of the important things that I like to tell people, you know, young kids coming out of college and people in this business even that are writers or fans, one of the most important things for anybody in this world, I think, these days, where everyone tries to purport themselves as an expert on everything, it's important for you to know what you don't know.
Yes.
Not many people...
And to admit it.
Correct. Not many people know what they don't know. I've said to you guys many times in the show where you ask me a question about a play, who's responsible for something, a coach thing. You know what I say? I say, I don't know.
We'll check on it.
The only guys that'll know are in the meeting room and the coaching staff. And I think we're in a situation right now where people don't know. And that's fine. As we talked about from the beginning, Paul, there was no slam dunk candidate.
No.
You know? There was no... You know, Nick Saban's not rolling down the road and taking this job tomorrow. You know,
Bill Parcells
isn't coming out of retirement and taking the job. Bill Cowher's not rolling his way down the road here. It's not happening.
I thought that the Saban and Belichick rumors were the most laughable of all the ones that have been thrown against the wall, of all the mud that has been thrown against the wall. I thought the Saban and Belichick ones were the most hysterical. I really do. And for those of us who do understand the people here and what their philosophy is and what it would take to make any of those things happen, we understand that logically speaking, those things were highly, highly, highly improbable. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say we know 150% that they were not going to happen.
Correct.
But applying logic
yes.
and those and to those people who we know well, very, very unlikely, and it's a shame that so many people in the general populace were led to believe that they were more possible than not.
Look, shot in the dark. That's what it is. It's a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
It's blindfold dart throwing. That's what it is. And that's fine. We talked a lot about the other candidates, Ready Point. I know you and Lance talked a lot about Pat Shurmur on your last show.
Yeah, well, we had been in that day.
No, of course, I understand. Right. And we had Patricia and McDaniels. Lance and I touched on them a lot on yesterday's show. So let's talk about Wilkes a little bit, because that's who the Giants interviewed yesterday. Their defensive coordinator for one season. He was their assistant head coach and defensive backs coach for the 2 years before that in 2015 and 2016. Kept the assistant head coach title for 2017 when he went to defensive coordinator. By all accounts, by the results, he seems like a good defensive coordinator, knows what he's doing. He's developed some younger players on that defense that they brought in over the last couple of years. In fact, their two corners were drafted players only a couple of years ago, which he helped develop, obviously as defensive backs coach.
D-line was the two D-tackles were drafted, also under Gettleman.
Kawan Short and not Lotu Lele. Who's the other big guy in the middle?
Oh,
and it's escaping.
I know.
Name. You know what? I'm
you know what?
About.
I'm looking for it. I'll go look. I'll go look for
Thank
it.
Thank you. And then throw in the fact I went back just for fun, and I said, you know, people talk about this guy as being really charismatic and a leader and stuff. So I said, you know, I'm going to go back and look at one or two of his defensive coordinator press conferences from this year with the Panthers. Mm-hmm. So I found him on YouTube. I watched it, and he's good. I like. He's very calm. He's in control. He's very serious. You would love him, Paul. There's a lot of X's and O's in his press conference.
Yes, I already have checked.
A lot of X's and O's in his press conferences. You would love it. So I think that part he'll be fine with. The question is.
Yeah.
Oh, I was. It is Star Lotu Lele.
Yeah.
Okay. I was right then. All right, good. Now I feel better about myself. And I think you'll like that part of the job. I don't think, you know, being in front of a room and motivating guys and being a leader would be an issue for him. But I will go back to the same thing I mentioned to Lance yesterday when somebody called in. John Mara's money quote, and I read it verbatim yesterday. I'll just, you know, kind of summarize it now, is that if you don't have head coaching experience or have been a coordinator for a long period of time, the deck is really stacked against you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say you can't do the job of a head coach, but the odds are a lot less than if you get somebody that's been a long-time coordinator, which I think everybody else that they've interviewed so far would qualify as a long-time coordinator.
Yes.
Or if you have former head coaching experience, of which three of the guys the Giants have interviewed already have, Steve Spagnuolo, Josh McDaniels, and Pat Shurmur. So that's, I think, is what's working against Wilkes, and obviously you have his Dave Gettleman connection when he was in Carolina.
Yeah. Vernon Butler is the guy that caused us some confusion.
Okay.
Number one draft pick in 16. I wasn't sure if he had actually taken starting reps away from the veteran.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But he's in the rotation.
And he's a good player.
I remember, Dave Gettleman will have a defensive line rotation here next year, by the way.
Oh, yes.
It will not be OV and JPP playing 95% of the snaps again.
No.
He actually brought that up. I forget. It wasn't his press conference. It was one of the interviews he brought that up, and I forget which one.
He's done a couple of them, actually. The Q&A with Steve Serby of the New York Post
was
outstanding.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, very much so.
I thought it was very interesting, his glowing things about Bill Walsh in his book. And I think it's a good football book, by the way. If you folks want to go read that, it's an excellent football book.
Your point to me before I digressed with the depth chart.
Working against them, lack of experience.
Yes. Here's what I said the other day, and I think this is a fair comment. At least for me it is. Maybe you'll see it differently. I thought the GM search going in, there was one guy whose resume was head and shoulders above everybody else. Dave Gettleman was so much more qualified than every other guy who was available. To me, you could logically say there's a favorite, and it looks like this guy is going to be the runaway winner because the resume – the credentials
and the connections
were so strong.
Correct. I that's fair.
Right?
That's fair.
Okay. With this head coaching deal, everybody to me is on the same floor. There's nobody up in the penthouse. They're all on the same floor. None of these guys check all the boxes. Every single one of them leaves at least one box empty.
That's why I said at the start of the show there was no home run candidate. This is going to be a very, very difficult decision.
Okay.
and a fun search.
And that's why, and I'm applying logic here, folks, because this has nothing to do with what John or I may or may not know inside
and
the building.
Guys, I will swear to you, to God, right now,
yeah,
I don't
do not know
a damn thing.
We do not know.
And by the way, I don't think anybody else does either.
No.
Maybe they do and I'm wrong, and I'm not trying to disparage anybody's reporting. I'm really not. They might have a source that's telling them great stuff, but there was no – in the article that people are referencing this morning – from Pat Lennon at the Daily
News. There's nothing substantial in there.
There wasn't even, like, a giant source tells me. It was all signs. And a lot of it was circumstantial evidence, which I think was good circumstantial evidence. Peter King had it in his mailbag column yesterday that Patricia would prefer the Giants to the Lions, which is – it's great. It's not his decision.
Exactly.
It's like he's picking a job. So – and I think a lot of the things that Pat put in his story this morning made sense from a deconstruction analysis, common sense type of point.
And that's all anybody can do right now.
And that's the thing. And I'm sure Pat, like you said, got something from his editor, and it's like, Pat, we need you to talk about who the next Giants head coach is going to be, and he did the best he could.
If you want to just follow some type of logic here, okay, here's what I would say, John, and the only reason for me that gives me maybe a little bit of a tick towards Wilkes is that Dave Gettleman was hired to do a job here for the Giants.
Yes.
And they firmly believe in everything about him and what he stands for, what he believes in.
His philosophy.
His philosophy, his structure, his blueprint, if you will.
Yeah.
They believe in that.
I agree with
100%
that.
100% or they wouldn't have hired him.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you're going to hire Dave Gettleman, you're going to give him a lot of say in this decision. Even though the owners have said they'll make the final call, they have said Dave Gettleman is going to have a lot of say.
To me, this is going to be a situation where Dave Gettleman gives his strong recommendation or rankings, and the ownership will say, all right, that's fine. That's the way I see it.
Unless somebody waves a hand in that room, whether it's Steve Tisch, John Mara, or for that matter, if they say to Dave Gettleman, we'd like this guy, and Dave says, I have a real objection.
Correct. And, you know, it could be true that John Mara and Steve Schiff have a conversation, and they both say, boy, we think this guy is the slam dunk winner based on these interviews, and then they'll obviously have that conversation.
Right. All right. So let's take all of that as a given.
Yes.
Because that makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that Dave Gettleman knows more about Wilkes than any of these candidates because he worked with him for 3 years in Carolina.
Of course,
right?
Experience, I don't think there's any doubt.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Why would Dave Gettleman stick his neck out for a guy who he knows a ton about and bring him into this office for a finalist interview if he did not feel very good and very strong about him? It seems to me, because he knows so much about this guy, if the stuff he knew wasn't very good, he would be like the rest of the Panthers' assistant coaches and not get called into the building.
True, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he likes Wilkes more than the guys that have
been
here already.
It does not.
It means he thinks highly of them,
right?
But it doesn't mean he's the best candidate.
Correct. And
right.
that's the only reason why I'm saying evidence seems to indicate, based on logic, that Gettleman thinks very much of Wilkes. Wilkes got himself an interview. So that says to me, okay, you know what? At least he's probably got one guy giving him a plus sign.
Right.
That doesn't mean
I agree with that.
He's running ahead of the pack, but he's probably got a plus sign in the room.
And by the way, don't take too much out of the equation either that Steve Tisch was in one meeting and not in the others.
The man has businesses
Correct.
Besides football to operate.
As Gary
okay?
Myers reported the other day, he's been traveling outside of the country. So
he's
I wouldn't
got
go
a lot to do.
Exactly.
So in any event, I just think that, you know, for that reason, I'm giving Wilkes a little plus that maybe I can't give the others. And quite frankly, all right, as I also said to Lance, I think I'm much more interested once this coaching thing gets done. I'm interested in the staff.
Because
a head coach without a terrific staff is not going to win a ton of games.
Thank you, Paul. And I made this point to Lance yesterday, too. And it's funny because we're coming to the same conclusion here. We weren't even on the show together.
No.
And to me, especially since, you know, we saw yesterday the Bears hired Charles Nagy?
Or yeah. Well, Charles Nagy was
the pitcher.
It was John Nagy? Nagy. It was Nagy.
I'm
out of it today.
Yeah, Charles Nagy was the pitcher for the Indians. Sorry.
He wasn't bad, by the
but
way.
But the former Chiefs OC, and he's
Matt.
Gonna, Matt Nagy. Thank you. Thank you. And he's going to call plays for the Bears. My bet would be, based on what just happened here, that whomever the head coach is going to be, he is going to have fully empowered offensive and defensive coordinators.
Yes.
That would be my bet. I don't. Again, I don't know that. I'm making an assumption based on what just happened. My thought would be, because I think John Mara has stated before that's his preference, that the head coach not also call plays on offense or defense. He has said that before. He will never force anything, obviously, but that
right.
he said has been his preference, that the head coach, as Dave Gettleman has said, will be a CEO type. And it's very important, especially if you hire an offensive coach, who's your defensive leader going to be? If you hire a defensive coach, who's your offensive leader going to be? It's very, very important.
To take that one step further, when Dave Gettleman was the GM with the Panthers, Ron Rivera is a defensive-minded head coach. He had a defensive yeah. coordinator who called the defense.
Did he always, or did Rivera call defensive plays at some point when he was head coach?
I can't say earlier in his career, but I know as things developed, he had a, I mean, Wilkes was calling
right.
defense this year. This would, this
oh,
was
I know
not
that.
Rivera.
I know.
So,
and McDermott was obviously calling defense there when he was there too.
The year before.
Correct.
So I don't know how it started when Rivera took the job at the very beginning, but if it did, well, then Gettleman saw to it that that changed.
Final point I want to make about the head coaches, and I brought this up to Lance yesterday, and he made the point that you and him hadn't really talked about this when you brought up Shurmur, and I'm surprised you didn't.
Okay.
Does it give you some pause, and I'm not saying it's disqualifying or makes him a bad candidate, does it give you some pause that you would be hiring another coach that runs the West Coast offense? Mr. Smashmouth, that's why I wanted to ask you the question, because you love your power run game, your Smashmouth football. And look, I know he's not throwing the ball over the yard in Minnesota, but Case Keenum is throwing the ball an awful lot
yeah,
up there.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When Shurmur was taking care of the offense with the Eagles.
Which stint?
Okay, well, I know he'd been there a number of times.
He was with Andy Reid for like 8 years there, and that's his West Coast as West Coast guy.
That is true. But then he came back a couple of times.
Yeah, with Chip Kelly for a year.
And
though that was Chip Kelly's offense, let's be honest.
It was. But if there's one thing that Shurmur knows, he knows what the NFC East is about. He knows this division.
That's true.
It's a smash-mouth division.
I agree.
He knows that even though there was a lot of throwing the ball around and chucking it around and a lot of schematics, we also know that the Eagles have usually been built on a physical offensive line, and they've usually had, despite their schematics, a power running back who was able to get tough yards.
Not under Andy Reid. Brian Westbrook wasn't a power running
oh,
back.
Oh, yeah, but he was a workhorse.
Yeah, but he wasn't
a workhorse. He wasn't
Paul,
a – but they ran a lot of, they ran a lot of stuff between the tackles and off tackle
that,
for him.
That's fine, but think about when Andy Reid was in Philadelphia. Wasn't the argument always that
he didn't run the ball enough?
They went away from Brian
yes.
Westbrook. They went away from
yes.
Dee Staley. They went away from Charlie Garner.
But they had those guys. It wasn't that they didn't have them. They built the team that had them.
And by the way, he was just a quarterback's coach there, too. He wasn't the coordinator. So he
yes.
wasn't calling plays there on their end.
Correct.
I want to make sure that's clear.
Well, and that's why I wanted to add to you.
Right.
They had those guys on the team, those physical backs who were tough-nosed running backs. And they did have a snot grabber of an offensive line.
Snot grabber.
Snot clobberer or whatever. You know what I mean.
Not really.
Hard-nosed, blue-collar offensive lineman, okay?
You.
And hey, I'm just trying to have fun here today, folks. Trying to liven up the show a little bit.
I'm having fun, I guess.
That's good.
That.
But so Andy Reid,
oh boy.
Andy Reid, though, dictated those plays.
Of course he did. Absolutely.
And so you're right. The criticism was he's getting away from the physical football that they should have been capable of running. So I don't know that I'm as phobic about Shurmur as you might think.
Okay.
Anyway.
I was just curious what your reaction was to that. Because I know a lot of people don't, when you think Pat Shurmur, they don't think West Coast offense right away. But that is his history. That's his tree. That's
let's
where
put it this
from.
Way. The Vikings greatly improved their offensive line this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they drafted Cook. And they started the season
absolutely.
Running the ball.
Sure they did.
And
I agree.
Cook was going pretty well until he got hurt.
All fair.
So
and they also throw the ball down the field.
Sure they do.
They don't just do
so.
Dunk. I agree with all that.
That says to me that I don't need to be as phobic about him.
Okay. I just wanted to ask you the question to get your opinion.
It's fair.
All right. 201-939-4513. We got a full bank of calls. I was going to make a draft point, but since we did so much on the coaching stuff, which was great, if somebody wants to talk about it, I'll make my big overarching point. But if we don't get there, that's fine, too. Let's go to Jack in New York. He's been holding the longest. He joins us first on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Jack, good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon to you guys.
How are you?
You guys may have somewhat answered my question.
That's okay. Ask it anyway.
Already. So you've screwed this up already. But anyway.
We're good at that.
Let's supposing that the Giants have done their interviews and they do have a choice, and the choice is a coach who is currently in the playoffs.
Okay.
There, if I understood you right, there cannot be made an offer, an acceptance, and an announcement until this person has finished the season.
By rule, you cannot have an agreement, written or verbal,
correct,
with anybody while they are still playing in the playoffs. However, Jack, if you remember last year, everyone and their relatives knew Kyle Shanahan was going to go be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. It was, he talked about it in interviews at the Super Bowl. So it's a very blurry line. Let me put it that way.
What you have is an understanding that we will make you the offer when we're allowed to.
Correct.
That's the way it works.
We're not making a verbal agreement that we'll make you that offer, but just understand that there's a good chance we might make you the offer.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nod, nod, thumbs up.
Be by your phone the second your team gets eliminated, because we'll be making a phone call.
And there'll be a polo shirt waiting for you in your mailbox the next day.
So it can go that far, then. At least, you know, there may be some understanding, but nothing official.
Yes.
Correct. An understanding, in quotes, is the way it goes.
Okay. All right. That's what I wasn't sure about, because, as I said, if you get one of these guys, New England, they'll probably go to the Super Bowl again. It'd be a while before we could make an announcement.
That's true.
That would be true. Although, again, with the understanding probably in place, it would leak out somewhere.
And it's not like, Jack, you're going to have, like, I know, but a lot of the rumors out there, Patricia's been linked down to the Lions and to the Giants. And the funny thing is that you had articles in both cities' paper this morning basically saying that this guy's going to coach that particular team, which just tells you how muddled this stuff can get. But I think the larger point is you're not going to have two teams that both think they have a verbal agreement with the same coach that's going to the Super Bowl. That candidate will let everyone else know that – he knows where he's going to go, and then those other teams will look elsewhere.
By the way, here's another point for you as you're monitoring this whole thing. These coaches nowadays, it's not like the old days where they did not have agents. They do, just like players.
Correct.
Okay? There's actually a Pro Football Coaches Association. There's a union with a whole bunch of agents who have scapped up all of these guys. So all of these folks have representatives who are trying to position their guys in the best possible spot. So, quite frankly, it makes a lot of sense for Agent Y to be talking about his assistant coach client getting rumored to go to a certain place, because maybe that turns up the heat on other teams who want to interview him and want to make him an offer, because now we can squeeze him for a better offer.
Thank you, Jack.
You see how it goes?
Appreciate the call, buddy. Thank you.
You got it.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Victor in Florida. Hey, Victor. Long time no speak.
Good afternoon, Paul.
What's going on?
Hi, Victor.
Hey, John, by the way, it seems like you grew more hair since the last time I talked to you. But anyway.
I wish that were true.
I'm partial to Steve Spagnuolo, okay? I like him, and
yes.
I think the players like him and respect him. What do you guys think about Spaggy?
Love him. But that doesn't mean because John and I like him as a person and as a football man that he's going to get the job.
Or that he's the best man for the job.
Doesn't mean that at all.
Correct.
It just means that we think very highly of him and respect him a lot. But so does everyone else in the building.
Correct.
Okay, well, I would love to see him as our coach. But anyway,
Vic, can I mention one more thing?
Vic, one more thing.
I know I'm cutting you off here, but it's important I mention this. I want to say this only because I'm tired of seeing the critics say Spags' defense is here with the Giants in his second tenure, have had two last place finishes, and then the one in 2016 that was very good. I'm tired of seeing that. You know why? Because in 2015, he was being asked to build a log cabin with broken toothpicks. And the fact that team was involved in so many games with 90 seconds to go and was competitive with a roster that should not have even been close to competitive, okay? That says to me, I think Steve Spagnuolo did the second best coaching job of his career in 2015.
But even going to some of his other stops, you know, there were some times, whether it was with New Orleans or
Saints
somewhere
else. Saints and the Rams did not work out well, but correct. You could also argue, again, the personnel was not very good.
No argument.
So, anyway, I'm just tired of seeing that stat put forth by anti-Spags people, because I do think in 2015 he was sensational.
What's your second point, Victor?
Okay, Paul, listen, the other thing I wanted to ask you is that Gettleman, was he let go from Carolina, or did he left on his own?
No, he was fired.
It was a personality conflict.
Is there any
reasons why? Well, I think personality conflict is one. I think some of the veteran players on the roster might have wanted to get some extensions and some extra money, and Dave Gettleman, wisely for players in their 30s, didn't want to do that, and that got the owner a little upset when the veteran players went to the owner and complained about it, and therefore you have your change.
I think anybody who knows anything about football will tell you Dave Gettleman's resume in Carolina, 4 years, three division championships, and a trip to the Super Bowl.
No, I would have.
Come on.
I want to put one asterisk. One of the division titles, they were 7-8-1.
I understand. I understand.
I would have put a little asterisk. I'm not saying his tenure wasn't great, but I don't want to throw a parade over 7-8-1.
He also built a team this year that made the playoffs, too.
No argument. Okay. I agree 100%.
Okay, I got two more quick things.
And this was his team this year.
Phone, okay? Paul, what I wanted to talk to you about that you call me on is already happened, so that's what I wanted to talk to you about, okay?
No problem.
The other thing is, in the draft, I would love to draft Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that?
For me, it's too early. Guys, look, I know everyone is really excited about the draft, and I get it. But until we go through Senior Bowl, we go through Combine, I have a chance to look at the tape on all these guys, and all these reports come out. I said this to Lance yesterday, Paul. At this time, 2 years ago, at this point 2 years ago, Miles Jack was a top five pick. He ended up getting picked at the top of the second round because of new information that came out over the span of a month and a half. So a lot can change between now and then. I'll tell you, Saquon Barkley is a dynamic running back. He'll be the top running back picked. If he's not a top 10 pick, I'd be very surprised. He could be a top five pick. Will he be in the mix? Absolutely. Should the Giants consider him? Absolutely. Okay. Do I know for sure that's going to be the Giants' pick, or it should be their pick at two? I don't know that as of January 10th, 3.5 months before the NFL draft.
Okay. Yeah, Victor, I, as always, we reserve the right to change our direction on this because a lot of stuff could happen. As John said, injuries could come out, personnel files could come out, and that just blows everybody out of the water. I would simply say this. Barkley, he's a running back for me. I can't see picking a running back that high under normal circumstances and conditions.
I agree with Paul.
However, he is such a dynamic player. I could see a certain set of circumstances where I would consider him.
I see that too.
I would go into that in detail another time, yes, much closer to the draft.
Yes.
It's not appropriate to do it now because there's a lot involved. But I would say this,
Vic.
In general, I would not pick a running back that high, but I would consider him at two, specifically if the Giants were guaranteed to build up that offensive line with other moves.
And by the way, we will know by then because free agency will
you
be
would
over.
Hope so.
Correct.
You thank would
you,
hope so.
Thank you, Victor. Appreciate the call, buddy. I will make my overarching draft point now because I think it relates to what Victor asked about.
Please.
A lot of people are excited about the draft. I get it. And I made the point yesterday. Somebody tried to call up and ask, like, talk about it. It was Charlie. He wanted to do specific trades, trading down twice and getting certain picks from certain teams back. And I just said, Charlie, until we know what players on what roster after free agency, doing this, it's a waste of everybody's time. So beyond that, I will caution fans this. Whatever the Giants do with the number two pick, whether it's selecting a player or trading down, when you pick that high, it's a situation to make a franchise-altering move, whether you pick a player or you trade down.
Yep.
That decision will impact your franchise from anywhere from 8 years to, if you pick a quarterback, as many as 15 years.
At least five.
At least five. But if you pick in second, you only get 5 years out of the guy you pick, you made a mistake. So it should impact your team for anywhere from 8 to 15 years, depending on the position you pick.
Mm-hmm.
I would be very, very careful deciding what you do with the second overall pick in the draft by looking at the Giants' current roster and how it's constructed. I'm not going to tell you it shouldn't matter at all, but I'm telling you it shouldn't matter a lot. Because long after a lot of these players on this roster are long gone,
that guy's still going to be here.
The guy you pick at two or the people you trade down and select after that are still going to be in their prime and on this roster.
I agree with that.
Snacks Harrison is the best run-stopping defensive tackle in football. He might be out of the league in 4 years. You don't know.
Don't know.
You don't know. You know what? In 4 years, whoever you draft is still on their rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when you call up and you think about who the Giants should pick, philosophically, your first thought shouldn't be, oh, this guy's going to fit well with Eli Manning. Eli Manning's almost 40 years old. Okay? You look back at some of the best offensive linemen picked the last couple years, and there are some exceptions to the rule. But even a guy like Jake Matthews in Atlanta.
Took a couple years for
him. He was bad his first year. He was like the sixth overall pick in the draft. Brandon Scherff struggled in his first year.
Mm-hmm.
He was a top 10 pick in the draft. Don't pick somebody to try to do some type of quick, short-term, win the next 2 years type of thing. That will kill you long-term. And I promise you, that's not what Dave Gettleman's thinking.
No,
he said, trust his board, Paul. He's going to trust his board. And he made the point. You can't have enough good players at a position.
That is true.
So he was going to trust his board here and do what's right for the team for the next 8 to 15 years, not for the next 2 or 3. And that's my spiel.
The caveat is that when you pick that high, you also do believe you're going to get immediate impact, though. It's an immediate impact, plus the fact that the guy's going to be here long after
Correct.
A bunch of your current players are gone. It works both ways in that particular case.
It does, but I wouldn't put it this way. If you think one player is going to be significantly better over 8 to 15 years than another, but the first player you think is going to be a little bit worse is going to help you more in the next 2 seasons, don't pick that guy.
Well,
pick the guy that's going to be the better player for 8 to 15 years.
Look at it this way. When you talk about the last times the Giants picked this high, right, two was Lawrence Taylor, we all know. He made an immediate impact.
Right.
Shortly after that, a couple of years later, Carl Banks was the number 3 overall pick in the draft, came right in, started right away, made an immediate impact.
Sure.
Was here for a long time.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, you want your cake and eat it too. You want that guy, if possible, to be an immediate impact guy, and also make sure he's going to have staying power and have long-term star potential.
How about Eli, though?
Well, again, situation comes down to if you're trading the pick to get multiple picks, now that equation gets warped a little bit because now you're not picking two.
Well,
if you trade the pick.
Well, the question then.
It warps the equation a tad.
Can you get more impact over 8 to 15 years from the picks you get in return for number 2 than you would just for number 2?
Exactly.
But it's still the same basic question, in my opinion.
No, because if you have the multiple picks, you can gauge that or can weight that question a little bit more towards immediate impact. Because if you're going to pick up, if you're going to pick up 4 guys instead of just 1, you want to hope that at least 2 of those guys can give you something right away.
Yeah, but guy is going to help you the most over 8 to 15 years, that doesn't mean you can't get an immediate impact out of him anyway.
No, it doesn't mean you can't.
Right.
It doesn't mean you can't. But I do think if you're going to draft, if you're going to trade the pick, if the number 2 pick gets traded for 4 picks, let's just say hypothetically speaking, you want to get something immediately out of at least 2 of those 4 guys. Because if you're waiting.
And that's fair.
If you're waiting on all 4 of those guys to say they're all going to be 8-year players, but I'm not getting anything for the first 2 years out of them, that's not helping you.
Yeah, but my point is this. I'm not going to go out and say, we need an offensive lineman. Oh, make sure you pick the offensive lineman here because we think you'll help us the first couple years when there's a much better, let's say, defensive end that you think is a much better player.
Understood.
Don't let need
Understood.
Sneak in too much. That's my major point.
If you can catch lightning in a bottle, you get the 2007 draft where all the rookies helped them win the Super Bowl.
Of course. Of course.
So can somebody ask for lightning? Can we get lightning again?
All right, let's go back to the phones. Mike in Florida, he's up next. Hi, Mike.
Can you guys hear me all right?
I hear
yes,
you loud
sir.
And clear, Mike. What's up?
All right, let me get you on speaker.
Okay.
Yeah, first of all, I agree with you, John, on your choice of a coach, Josh McDaniels, and I'll go on to my question. It's really not a question. It's something that I noticed as I researched on the Internet about Davis Webb. I looked at all his footage as much as I could. I absorbed almost everything I could find on the Internet. And, frankly, I think he has a very good chance of actually starting with this team. I watched Josh Rosen's his footage, and they almost kind of remind me of the same kind of player. They're very lanky. They have a good live arm.
Mike, I want to ask you what footage of Davis Webb you watched.
Well, it's all of his highlights.
College, of NFL? What highlights? He didn't have any Giants highlights. He played
college.
Like a quarter.
Because that's his resume. You know, that's where his resume
is.
Yeah, but Mike, here's the thing. And I actually went back and I watched 3 Davis Webb games from last year at Cal. He was asked in those 2 or 3 games to make maybe 2 or 3 NFL caliber reads and throws. He was in, it wasn't even Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson did NFL things in college. Davis Webb, in the 3 games that I watched, did 0 NFL things, almost 0 NFL things in college. He was in shotgun every play. It was either the quick screen or a one read, one half of the field type of deal, and he was not asked to do a lot of NFL stuff. That's why he was a 3rd-round pick. So the Giants last year literally had to teach him to be an NFL quarterback, which was almost a different position than what he played at Cal for what they were asking him to do there. That's how big of a change it is. So there's a lot of projection involved, given we haven't seen Davis Webb on the field in the NFL a whole lot. There's still a lot of projection. As Paul has pointed out, the tools are there. The smarts are there. The size is there. The arm is there. But
the intelligence.
And the intelligence is there. No question about it. The work ethic is there. But here's the thing, Mike. I've watched around 6 or 7 games of Rosen. Rosen does more NFL things in 1 game than I saw Webb do in any of his games in college. He does dropbacks.
He doesn't throw a better ball, for what I see.
I disagree with you.
About the same. Davis Webb throws a beautiful long ball. It's on the money. It's right into the basket when a guy's down the field. I was impressed.
Mike, I will tell you this.
I know he's not doing the NFL thing you're talking about, but as far as just his – the way he throws the ball, and he can learn.
Kevin Gilbride once.
NFL system, obviously, but he throws a good ball. They're right on the money when he was in college.
Mike, throwing a good ball, and this is something Kevin Gilbride said to Paul and I a couple years ago, throwing a good ball is actually fairly low on the list of things. Look, you have to be able to throw a decent ball, yes, but it's the other stuff that's a lot tougher.
Well,
NFL quarterback.
Is what I'm trying to stress. I thought he was pretty accurate in school.
Well, no. Look, and I'm the biggest Davis Webb fan going, but I'm going to make it very clear to you. He did have some accuracy issues on the long ball in college. Don't. I get it. But look, I'm with you. I love the kid's skill set, and I love all the intangibles and the work ethic and the smarts and everything we just talked about 2 minutes ago.
All that's true.
I love all of those things, which is why I find it very difficult for people who haven't seen him in the building for 6 months. I find it difficult for them to be so against him and so willing to pass him over.
By the way, he's here today.
Exactly.
Just for an example.
He's always here.
I know he is.
I mean,
exactly. I mean, I say let it play out in camp, and see how it plays out. But I hear all this talk about getting a quarterback when I read a lot of articles, and they're like just bypassing. They're like, he hasn't even got a shot at it. And I believe this guy's got a shot.
No, but Mike, here's
it.
The thing: he might have a chance. And look, I will say this: he has a chance.
He's a number 3. He's not a number 6. Brady was a number 6, but he was
right.
Special.
Mike, I could go through the last 15 drafts and list all the 3rd-round quarterbacks. The percentages are not good. Okay, I'm just telling you.
Comparatively
the percentage
speaking.
Of 3rd-round quarterbacks that make it to not make it is not a good percentage.
Then again, Tony Romo was a free agent.
There are always exceptions to every rule.
I know.
Of course.
I think he's got an upside. I just think
sure
he's going to work out.
Absolutely.
All
right, here's one thing I will give you that I do think is a little bit more significant.
He's 6'5 and 230. You're not a little guy.
Look, I've compared him to Kerry Collins' skill set with more escapability out of the pocket, okay? Which I think that's a compliment. There are some people who.
Chelsea has a live arm, too.
Kerry Collins had a cannon, trust me. But here's what I'm saying to you.
I would say Collins probably had a better arm than Webb has, but that's okay.
He was also older and more mature by the time
he
got here.
Kerry Collins is one of the better arms in the league when
he did. He was by the time he got here, he was in his prime.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The one thing that's different than everything else that needs to be taken into account, and you've done this, John, too. Talk to teammates of the kid who have been around him, who have seen him do whatever he's done in practice, and off-the-record conversations, and I'm not giving up names here because that's not what we're going to do, but conversations you have had with teammates, I know all of mine have been nothing but positive. The guys in that locker room all believe that Davis Webb has what it takes to be a starter in this league. And when players
and
in that locker room,
let me just say this
to the naysayers:
the naysayers
will tell you that the coach is just spouting public BS and he's spouting politically correct stuff. And you know what? Coaches do have to say some things for public consumption. We would all agree with that, John.
Of course.
But when players in the locker room privately, you talk to them and you say, "What do you think about this guy? What'd you see in practice? What do you see in the study, in the film study rooms? How's he conduct himself? Do you guys look at him as somebody who's got it?" They all tell me positive things. And I'm sure you've come up with the same stuff.
And here's the thing, Mike, and an additional thing to that, you talked to some of the coaches too, and what I'm told about him is that based on what we've seen from him, he has a chance. And that's the way they put it. But at the same time, everyone also says, until you see him under fire in an NFL game,
you don't know. Exactly.
Thank you, Mike.
Before I go, I'm done, guys. But I really like Barkley. He's a special kind of guy. Like Beckham.
Sure is.
I could see it. I watched all the running backs in all the college games. I like Harris. I like Bo. I thought Bo Scarborough was going to be the greatest thing, and then I didn't like the way he played. And then the guy that stood out was that Barkley. Boy, he could break it at any time, that guy.
He's a freak show.
And so is Michelle. He's a good runner. I'll take any one of those guys, but I tell you, you're right, Paul. He is like a special player.
Yeah,
he is. Thank you, Mike.
All right, guys, that's all I have. Thank you.
And then you have Darius Geis, the kid from LSU, who might be a top 20 pick. He's more of your traditional – he's the guy I thought you would like.
Yes.
He's your downhill, power, one step in the ground type of guy. Can I say one other thing about Webb real quick?
Yeah.
And the whole quarterback thing. Folks, we're not talking about sure things here. We're talking about giving yourself the highest probability of success.
Measuring the risk.
Correct. And the reward. What's the chance? And again, I'm not going to make a determination right now where I lean on this. We'll do it closer to the draft. Do you have a better chance of Davis Webb, who is a third-round pick and has been here for a year, developing into your future franchise quarterback? Or do the Giants believe there's a better chance of the quarterback they selected second, if they go that direction, has a better chance of being the franchise quarterback? Because anybody that calls up and tells you that they know X player is going to do this or X player is going to do that, they're blowing smoke up your rear end because nobody knows. When it comes to quarterbacks going from college to the pros, nobody knows.
True.
It's about giving yourself the best chance.
You know what it's like? Nobody knows if any good assistant's going to be a good head coach. It's the same thing.
And it's about putting everything you know about these guys into a spreadsheet or into a vat, mixing it up, and deciding what gives you the best chance to succeed. Because, folks, make no mistake about it. I know a lot of people have almost casually said, well, let's give this kid a chance and see what happens. Folks, that's great to say now, but in 3 years, if Eli's gone and he's not it, then what?
Oh.
And you're up, you know what's creek right there, and you're reaching for a quarterback, and all of a sudden you're in purgatory. Because a lot of these Giant fans, Paul, don't remember the mid-90s.
Could be the same thing, though, that if you draft this quarterback, you might wind up drafting Dave Brown, who George Young thought was going to be Phil Simms' successor. And what happened?
Yes, different.
No, it's the same thing.
Different supplemental draft in the NFL draft.
But they spent a first-round pick on him.
Well, look,
he turned out to be bust.
What if he's Christian Ponder? What if he's Kyle Bowler?
I know.
It's about maximizing probabilities. That's what it's about.
No question. Weigh your reward, weigh your risk, and then have conviction, and you have to then say, look, this is where I stand and this is where I got to go. Because the last thing you want is a waffler. If you're going to be wishy-washy and waffle on it and not have conviction and say, look, based on what I know, this is how I feel, you're going to be in big trouble. Because wafflers and wishy-washy guys are the worst types to make this kind of decision.
Well, I don't think Dave Gettleman's a wishy-washy type of fella.
He's absolutely not.
Correct.
Which is why I've said, while I have my conviction that Davis Webb is the next guy and there's no way I'm taking a quarterback, and again, I can't know 100%. How can I? I'm with you. I can't know, but I'm man enough to take a stand to say this is what I know, this is what I think the risk-reward is, and I'm taking a stand. I'm not going to be wishy-washy.
And good for you.
Okay? Dave Gettleman's not going to be wishy-washy, which is why if Dave Gettleman says, in his mind, he's got the next Eli Manning sitting on the board and he has to take him, I back Dave Gettleman. Under those circumstances, if that's what happens, then I'll say, Dave, I think you are one of the most intelligent football guys in the business, and if you make that pick at quarterback at number two, then I guess I'm just a media guy who doesn't know as much as you do, and I support the fact that you made the pick for the quarterback. And let's see what happens.
I agree. And, Paul, and I'll add this real quick. Again, I haven't looked at Darnold yet. I haven't looked at Josh Allen yet. I haven't looked at Mayfield or Jackson or Rudolph or any
Allen's got the best skill set. We don't know about his head.
He has the tools. No
but
question.
He's got the best tools of any of the quarterbacks in the draft, and I've said that for months, and I'll keep saying it. Allen's got the best skills. Anyway.
I will say this, though. Rosen, from what I saw in these games, his transition to the pros will be rather seamless in that he's under center, he runs play action, he throws every pass. I've seen him throw 20-yard outs. I've seen him throw posts. I've seen him throw deep ins. He makes every NFL throw in the book, and he runs a system with NFL concepts in it.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what I've seen from him, if I'm just talking about the tape and what I've seen on the field, I have more confidence based on what Rosen's done on the field versus what Webb has done only on the field now. Rosen has shown me more that he's capable of doing NFL things on the football field. Now, is it possible that Webb developed to the point this year and will continue to develop, that he is also going to be able to do that? Yes. But based on what they've done in games so far, Rosen has done more, in my opinion.
See, my counter on that goes back to the Gilbride theory, that it's not just about the skill set. Now, while I promote Davis Webb's skill set as being NFL caliber.
And I agree it is, too.
What I have seen from him over the last 6 months on a day-to-day basis while he has lived basically in this building is that I know he has all of the intangibles that will logically lead to success on an NFL field. I don't know about any of those intangibles about any of these QBs in college because they haven't been here for the last 6 months, eating and breathing and sleeping NFL football, or for that matter, had the benefit of Eli Manning to soak up like a sponge.
I agree with that 100%. The question is, what will you eventually value more?
Right. How much value do you put in that?
Correct.
I put a lot of value in it. Other people don't.
Correct.
But that's why there's a difference of opinion.
And there are fair arguments both ways.
Again, as long as opinions are based in logic and fact, they're perfectly valid. But my problem is when people say flat out, oh, Davis Webb can't be the next guy. That's just foolish.
Whoa.
Just like I can't say for sure he's the next guy, but I can say I believe in him. I'm allowed to say that.
Sure you are.
So
I think we came to a nice agreement there.
We're okay.
I thought this was going to be a much more throw-down argument. That was okay.
No.
That was okay.
Because we're presenting logic. Logic is always good. Logic is fair.
And by the way, I don't think the Browns are going to take Rosen. You know, the Browns, I've talked to a couple people in Cleveland that I trust, that I know.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns, I'm not going to say it's an inferiority complex, but Cleveland is a very big city in terms of being proud of who they are and being proud of the Browns.
Yes.
And all that sort of stuff.
It should be.
Absolutely. Good franchise, great blue-collar city.
Great city.
Absolutely.
For football.
Agree 100%. I feel like that's a team that would shy away from drafting a guy that makes it clear he doesn't want to play there. The way everything's gone there the last 10 years.
I could see that.
And John Dorsey's trying to turn this around. Does he want to start that by drafting somebody that says he doesn't want to play in Cleveland?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not a great look.
I don't know. And by the way, other things about Rosen, too, is durability. I worry about that. I worry about his frame.
You should.
Nobody is a – and I'll say – it'll be the first of many times you get tired of me saying this, folks, but I'm going to say it again anyway. There's no perfect prospect. There's no home run. There's no grand slam.
No.
It's making your evaluation of who has the best chance of being successful, and that's what the Giants will do. Anyway, here we go. Scott in New Mexico. He's up next. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hi, guys. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hi,
hello.
Scott.
Had a couple of things. First of all, whoever is the Giants' head coach, whether it's Wilkes, Patricia, or someone else, I think the Giants will make the right choice, and I'm not so worried about that. I had a couple of questions, one of them being, since the 2000 season, do you either of you know how many quarterbacks drafted number one by their team actually went to the Super Bowl? Since the 2000 season.
You're talking first round or first overall?
The drafted number one by their team.
Okay, so a first round pick.
Correct. The only ones I can think of are the two Manning brothers and Roethlisberger. Is there anyone else?
Win or just go?
Win.
Well, I mean, there haven't been that many different teams that have won the Super Bowl over the years.
Well, here are the number one, all-time number one draft picks. And
remember, first round, though. It doesn't mean
first
overall.
Round.
So, okay, so here's,
words,
so here's what I'm going to do.
Drafting in the first round, drafted a quarterback in their first round, and that team went on to win the Super Bowl.
Well, okay, I'm looking at the all-time Super Bowl.
Well, and
here,
just
okay?
In terms of overall number one quarterbacks who have won a Super Bowl,
right.
Since that time, there's only Eli Manning and David Carr won it as a backup. That's
well, no,
it.
Didn't
Roethlisberger win?
No. I'm talking about number one overall pick.
Well, okay.
Not talking about first rounders. I was talking about number
one.
One
by their
yes.
team.
Yes. Okay. First round pick. Okay.
Team.
Go ahead. What do you got?
Real quick, I'm going to go through the Super Bowls here real fast, okay? Let's see. Patriots beat the Falcons 34-28. Obviously, Tom Brady. Matt Ryan, though, first round pick in the Super Bowl. Broncos beat the Panthers 24-10. That's obviously Peyton Manning beat Cam Newton.
Right.
Both people in the Super Bowl first round picks. Patriots beat the Seahawks 28-24. Russell Wilson obviously he was a second round pick, right? Wilson of the
right.
Seahawks.
Yes.
So he lost in that game. You had the Seahawks 43, Broncos 8. That was another first round second rounder. Ravens Joe Flacco was a first round pick. They beat the 49ers 34-31. Kaepernick was a second round pick. Giants, Patriots, obviously you have Eli and Brady. Packers and Steelers, you have Rodgers and Roethlisberger, also both first-round picks. Saints and Colts, that would be Breeze over Manning, so a first- and second-round pick. Steelers, Cardinals, Kurt Warner, obviously an undrafted free agent. Roethlisberger, a first-round pick. Giants, Pats, Eli Manning again. Then you have Colts, Bears, that was Peyton and Grossman. Steelers and Seahawks, that was Hasselbeck, second-round pick, Matt Hasselbeck?
Wasn't a one.
No, he wasn't a one.
Wilson was a three, by the way,
Russell Wilson a three, thank you. So you're looking at mostly first- and second-round picks that have won or been in the Super Bowl, with the exception of Tom Brady, who obviously is a huge outlier in that conversation.
Well, Fox.
Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is, as I think both of you have intimated, the draft is a crapshoot.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a better number before you go further. There are 15 Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks who are not first-round picks.
Right.
15.
So the percentages actually work not for your first-round pick. So the reason even bringing this up is...
Hold on. There've been over 50 Super Bowls, and only 15 were not first-rounders. So the majority were first-round picks, but the point you're going to make is...
70%.
15 is still a lot, though.
Correct.
It's not like it's minuscule.
But 70% being first-round picks is a significant number.
No doubt.
Right. But the reason I'm bringing it up is looking at the draft. I think the Giants whoever they feel is best for their team. But is
That's
it
true.
Necessary to look at the quarterback as your number one pick if you do believe in Davis Webb? And I'm just wondering if the Giants would be making a mistake by drafting a quarterback in the round. That's why I was bringing it up in regards to where you get, you know, and how far you get.
Scott, it's very simple. If Dave Gettleman evaluates these quarterbacks and comes to the conclusion that he believes one of these guys is your next franchise quarterback and he's sure of it, you make the pick.
Look, right. I'll make it real simple for you. And I use Hostetler as a comparison a lot because he was a number three and a third rounder, and he won with the Giants. Joe Montana was a third round pick for the 49ers.
Right.
Okay?
But
I mean, there are going to be a segment of guys who buck the trend.
Correct. But
it's just, it's going to happen.
But if you look at percentages, you have a better chance of finding a great quarterback in the first round than in the third round.
Now,
it's just mathematical fact.
Let me also add this to you, though. And this, follow the bouncing ball.
Teams that draft first round
quarterbacks usually get them high in the first round because that's where quarterbacks are usually valued in
the first round. Sure, I think that's fair, absolutely.
Okay, that means those teams were probably pretty bad the year or two before because they got a higher pick.
I agree with that.
That also means in the second, third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth rounds, they have higher draft choices. Right. And when you pick higher in each round, you got a better chance to get a better crop of rookie players in that draft.
Okay.
Okay? Which, therefore, okay, means if you're getting better picks and better rookie crops, you got a better chance of being a better team in the next 2 or 3 years.
Not if your organization is run really poorly, which a lot of these teams are because they're picking so high in the draft.
Again, that there will be exceptions to that rule.
Right.
But logic says if you're picking higher, because this is why the NFL does it this way, they want it to balance out, and they want the bad teams to turn around and become good teams quicker.
Sure.
So, and usually rotten teams who are picking that high have fired their previous coach because he lost. They bring in a new coach, and that new coach, more often than not, turns the team around with the better picks, the franchise quarterback, and then wins something.
Scott, we got to go, man. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
it.
I have two more calls I need to get in here.
Yep.
Bottom line, though, and just say I agree with you, John. There's a better chance of having success with a high first-round pick quarterback than a pick in the later rounds.
Those numbers are indisputable.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to hear. Jerry in Boca, he's up next. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, good afternoon, John and Paul. And since you're running short on time, let me just make two comments. Maybe it's a Florida thing, but I have to agree with Victor that I like Steve Spagnuolo. And like Gettleman, what I noticed between the two of them, notwithstanding the fact that they both have Boston accents, they both speak plainly with very little coach speak.
Correct.
And I'd like to see Spagnuolo, and because some of the other things that you've commented on, that as a head coach, he becomes a manager of the rest of the staff. And the coordinators are the people that he has to select and he has to control. And I think that he would be an excellent manager. So that's one comment. And because we're running short of time, let me just ask you this question.
Sure.
During the championship game, ESPN had a channel with coaches analyzing plays in real time and commenting on what they saw at first sight, and then they would instantaneously replay them and they would pick up on things. I thought this was an excellent opportunity to really understand what goes on in football, and I just wondered, is there any chance that we might be able to see NFL coaches doing this when they get past the regular season and perhaps on selected postseason games?
I love it.
Same kind of thing.
I love it. I think it'd be fantastic. And by the way, I have that on my DVR. I plan on watching it. I watch the game on the regular feed live. But every year, and this is the third or fourth year they're doing it, I DVR that every single year. It's a lot of fun. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that.
I posted on Twitter, I desperately wished that ESPN could do that for the Super Bowl. The problem is they don't have the rights to the Super Bowl, so I don't think they can do it.
And I think NFL coaches would probably be
very shy to do it.
Going in there and doing that.
Very shy to do it. And it's a shame
awesome. Now, what you could do, if you really wanted to do it, because then he couldn't stop you, is you bring in, if you're NBC, you bring in Tony Dungy. You bring in Kevin Gilbride.
Yes.
You bring in
retired guys.
Retired coaches.
Who have no interest in coming back, although John Gruden kind of busted that mold, didn't he?
But that's what you could do, and I think that would be awesome.
The problem is, to do that, though, you need the rights to the game because you want to keep the game on one part of the screen while the coaches are talking. ESPN doesn't have the rights to the game, and none of the networks are going to give it to them.
Though.
So now you could just – what would you just do? Have them watch it and just say you look at it, and you're just going to see the coaches in the room?
No, but what if you have – the Super Bowl's on NBC this year, right?
Right.
NBC Sports Network.
Oh, you mean have them do it on their alternate channel?
That's what ESPN does. They have it on ESPNU.
Yeah. Yeah, well, obviously Bristol couldn't pull it off, but maybe NBC Sportsnet could pull it off.
Or I guarantee NFL Network could do it. It's the NFL.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but Fox would be ticked off.
Wait.
Not Fox, NBC. NBC would be ticked off at the NFL.
His eyes aren't watching their network.
They're going to say, you're letting fans watch the game with the coaches on NFL Network. You're pulling eyes away from us, and now you're taking revenue.
I agree.
All right. It's all about the money, folks.
I know we're late, but I got to get my man Seamus up in Albany.
Okay.
He's next. Hi, Seamus.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hi.
Top of the morning to you. Sorry, Seamus, I had to do it.
I'm not that Irish.
I know. I'm sorry. I had no choice.
John, I want to ask you, last year prior to the draft, I think it was at the Combine, you got to get off site and do some interviews, and you just did an awesome job. You were just a fantastic host. You brought in some people. You gave them a chance to talk. You kind of directed some questions we had during Big Boo Kickoff Live.
I appreciate that.
You were spectacular. I hope you get a chance to do that again.
Seamus, we will be there again. Paul was with me there last year, too, and we did BBK for 3 days at the Combine. We're going to do it again, and we hope to bring you the I think that's some of the best content we have all year, to be honest with you, and we look forward to doing it again this year. It should be great. And by the way, I will say this. We're not going to have the show there, but I could go to the Senior Bowl this year. So I will do live hits from the Senior Bowl on the phone with Paul and Lance and Jeff back here in the shop the week of the Senior Bowl, and hopefully I'll be able to give some insight from there this year as well.
Nice. My question real quick was week 17, where we didn't have a good running game for most of the season. Week 17, we seemed to turn that around. We had two rookie offensive tackles in. My man DJ Fuker was not in there, but Biznavati was in there. A lot of people thought that Eli was going to get killed back there, but yet, although Biznavati, you know, he had some flaws, granted, there was a lot of good things I saw there. I saw passing lanes open quite often. On the big run there, you just heard a crack at one point. And if you look to find out what the source of that, it was Biznavati.
But there were five key blocks on the Darkwood 75-yard run. Just so you know, there were five key blocks. It all worked marvelously well, but you have to take it with a grain of salt because that Redskins team was not interested in playing that day.
It really looked like they had put the stamp on the envelope, didn't it?
So, you know, but here's what I will say to you.
And Ryan Kerrigan did put Biznavati on his heels a few times.
Yeah, so don't get
game.
Too excited about that. But if you want to get excited about the games when Fluker started and they averaged 110 yards a game on the ground, you can certainly do that. Because I love DJ Fluker, and I think he needs to be back.
You like DJ Fluker, really?
I'm just saying.
Couldn't have guessed.
Just saying.
I would like to, and I tweeted both of you guys about this. I would like to see just I would just like to have the opportunity to see DJ Fluker and Biznavati play next to each other, preseason or whatever. They're two big guys. I would like to see what that run game looks like.
Thank you, Seamus.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it, man. Good call. Yeah. Look, you want to have Biznavati come in here next year or compete, that's fine. Somebody tweeted me about this a couple weeks ago. You want to have him come and compete? Great. You're not handing him a job.
You can't.
No. In fact, right now, Paul?
He wasn't even on the 53 till the end of the season.
Paul, right now, based on who's going to be on the contract, ain't nobody being handed a job at any spot on that offensive line next year.
Well, they all have to compete, but I think Brett Jones and Fluker, well, Fluker's not signed.
Neither is Brett Jones.
Yeah, but because of the restrictions on the contract, he's not going anywhere.
Well, what happens if Weston Richburg resigns? Then you will have a competition between Richburg and Jones.
That is true.
That's what I'm saying. I don't. And is Fluker is Flowers going to be at left tackle? I guarantee he'll have a chance to play somewhere.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the starting five.
But where?
I tell you what.
That's competition.
Here's the interesting part. And again, I'm not saying that Flowers is moving.
I don't know what he's doing either.
But if you do want to talk about power and beef on the strong side of the offensive line, imagine if they did flop Fluker to right tackle and had him and Flowers and Fluker next to each other. That's a lot of beef, baby. That's a lot of beef.
If I'm a defense, I run a stunt every single play on that side of the
field. I know you do.
I run stunts, and I have them running around like crazy and pointed.
But you know what I'm doing then? I'm also strong
power run right at it.
That strong side, and I'm going to run straight ahead power stuff, and I'm also going to make sure that my tight end is doing a lot of help with those quick edge guys. Anyway,
I almost got the whole show without Paul talking about DJ Fluker.
Can't do it.
I almost did.
Can't do it.
Damn.
DJ, get well, man. I know you're still rehabbing. Get well.
He was out of the boot last time I saw him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a banged-up shoulder, too, though. So he's got a lot of stuff going down. But he's going to be okay.
Will you be going with DJ to his next doctor's appointment?
I just want to make sure that this guy is ready and on the field in this September. That's all that matters to me. Let's go. We got to say goodbye.
Are you done?
I'm done.
All right, let's go eat lunch. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoe. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow. It's Dottino and Lance, and I'm back with you on Friday with Mr. Feagles. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a tremendous afternoon.